The wheel of time turns, and ages come and pass, leaving memories that become legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. Welcome to Adventures in Randland. I'm Andy.
And I'm Wendy.
And today we will be discussing The Dragon Reborn, chapters 15 through 22. We are basically, in today's reading, we're focused on only the girls. Like, Rand doesn't even show up except for an occasional mention. And Matt's there, but only to be healed. Perrin is not there at all. I mean, it's just the girls.
A bit to Matt. There's a little bit to Matt.
Well, Matt's there, yes. And there is some to Matt. But it's only because he's in Tar Valon. Does that matter? I don't know. I don't think it matters. Okay. So what were your overall thoughts on this week's reading?
Again, you pissed me off.
That's what I do. That's my job.
Ending it when I should, you know.
If I tried to make it so it ended in a good spot every week, you would just be reading the whole chapter or the whole book. There isn't a good spot. It's not like it's divided into like part one, part two, part three, part four. That would be too easy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I like the fact that it starts out fast and just never really slows down through this week's reading. So
no, it doesn't.
It's just one after another. And it ends great. I love chapter 22. I love some of my favorite scenes of this entire series are the testing scenes. You know, just because they tell cool stories. So yeah. All right. So shall we begin? Chapter 15, titled The Gray Man. We've met gray men already, right? Sort of. Well, we might talk about that later.
I think we have.
Okay. You may be right. So I get confused because I've read the series several times, so I forget order of operations sometimes. All right. So Egwene and Nynaeve, we remember last week we left off with them being scolded by Swan. And then told, hey, well, your punishment is to, you're going to try to find the Black Aja and root him out. Yeah. Fun. So they leave that meeting and they're headed towards Elaine's room, even though they were told not to tell anybody about it. So they immediately head to Elaine's room and Egwene just kind of turns her head and a crossbow bolt just straight past her head and actually clips her ear all Donald Trump style. And
maybe that's where he got the story.
Must have been. And Egwene realizes, hey, that could have killed me. It's like, and it would have killed Nynaeve too. If I didn't turn my head right then, it would have gone straight through my head and straight through Nynaeve.
Yeah.
So Nynaeve like drags her to the ground and then sees a man and ties him up in air. And by the time they reach him, though, they see that he's dead and he has it. He has a dagger sticking out of him and no crossbow. So that's fun. Who do you think killed him?
I think that it was what's her face? But that's only because she showed up later.
Sheriam or Elida?
Selena.
Oh, Selene. Up. Yeah, it could be. And Selene is who?
She is, what, Leandrin? No.
Lanfear,
yes.
Okay.
But it's only because she showed up in the following chapter.
Okay, that makes sense. I think there may be a pin put right here in our conversation. Just stick that pin right in. So, all right. No, I already did. You don't have to. Don't get it too deep because then it's hard to get it out. So Sheriam shows up. And Nynaeve tells her that they found him like he is. Like, they're just like, well, we just came down here and there was this dead man. Just right there. So Sheriam, like, delves him and sees that he's a gray man. And she, like, shrieks back, like, oh, my God. It's like, and she kind of explains to us what, and to the girls, I guess, and we just happen to be casual observers, what gray men are. And basically they are men or women who gave their souls to the devil or to the shadow, and in doing so they became one of his assassins, and that you can't see them. Like, they just, most of the time, like, they can just like float into a room And they're so normal, so average that nobody sees them until they've killed already. So she then sends Nynaeve and Egwene to their rooms and tells them, don't tell anybody about this. You can tell Swan if Swan brings it up first, or you can talk to me about it, but that's it. Don't tell anybody else. So, of course, the girls don't tell anybody about it ever, and the story ends. That was such a good story. So Egwene mentions that she's cold, and she needs to go grab her, her coat.
I don't think she realized that she was cold. I think she was using that as a cover to get the crossbow bolt.
Exactly.
It'd be kind of strange if there was a crossbow bolt found.
Especially if they just showed up and found the dead gray man.
Exactly.
So yes, I think you're absolutely correct. But she goes back to grab that bolt and it's gone. So now the girls are thinking, oh man, there's another gray man in the tower.
Yep.
So she heads back to Nynaeve and Sheryam, and Nynaeve is kind of questioning Sheryam, and she mentions that it's strange that Sheryam never wondered who stabbed the gray man, which we don't know that for sure. She may be wondering it. She's just not talking to the two novices about it. You know what I mean? So, but yes, Nynaeve is always questioning.
Mm-hmm.
Anything else stand out on chapter 15?
Well, that Nynaeve held the guy in air, and she had never really done it before. She watched it being done once before, and she did it. And the thing was, is like she searched him out and found him. It wasn't like she was really seeing him, I don't think. I don't think she saw him. I thought she found.
I think you're right.
His presence.
So,
and then held him. So they could get to him to figure out who the hell he was.
There seems to be an association in this chapter, or in this book, or in this story, in this series. It's easy for you to say. But there seems to be an association between strength and the power and ability to learn. So Nynaeve is super strong. She's the strongest in the power that we've met. Outside of maybe the Forsaken, you know, I mean, but she is very strong, so she seems to be able to learn very easily new things. And Egwene has shown the ability to as well. Elaine to a degree has as well, and they're both very strong. They're not as strong as Nynaeve, but they're both very strong as well. So
right, and Nynaeve's getting better at doing it without getting. Nynaeve is getting better at doing it without getting mad.
Yes, but that still is a bit of a crutch for her. She still hasn't totally gotten over that. It's almost like if she doesn't try, she can do it too. You know, like if she doesn't concentrate on it, like the reverse of what everybody else has to do. All right. Chapter 16, titled Hunters 3. So we're back with Egwene and Nynaeve again. They head to Nynaeve's room, and because they were just in Elaine's room, that's where they were headed. And Elaine is there in Nynaeve's room, and she's having an argument with Galad and Gawain. Have we met them yet?
Yeah, we did.
I thought we did. We met them in Rand ran into him in Camelin. That's right. I do.
Silly boy.
The problem is, I remember in the past and the future, and, you know, it gets confusing. So so they're in there having an argument with Elaine, and Galad flirts with Egwene, and she gets all gushy about it. Yeah. You know, it must be nice to be a teenager.
Yeah.
And then he tells the girls about the deal they made with Morghais to stay in the tower. And Nynaeve tells them they need to leave her room, and they basically ignore her. They're like, whatever, you know, and then she threatens to send a note to the Master of Arms telling them that they've entered the accepted tower without, or the accepted quarters without permission, and that she's going to make sure she's there to see them punished if they don't leave.
Right.
So they do, like they try to talk their way out of it, and she starts the old, you're a 3-year-old and you have 3 seconds to leave. One,
Yes. I'm
to, yeah, it just made me think of being a little kid. This is going to hurt you more than it, or this is going to hurt me more than it hurts you. Okay. But, that's a my momism, but, the worst answer I ever gave to that is, well, then don't do it. That apparently wasn't the right answer. So who would have thought it? So they leave and Galad tells them that, if they need help with anything, he's there, he'll help them. So Egwene tells Nynaeve that she didn't know that men couldn't enter the accepted quarters. And Nynaeve says, well, I made that up, but they don't know that, you know, they didn't know it. So it worked, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So Elaine then called out Egwene for keeping silent during the conversation. And she told her that basically leave Galad alone, that you should go after Gawain if you're going to go after one of the two, because he is completely besotted by you.
Yes.
So there's an argument that always comes up between the Galad, Gawain, Egwene combo that she... Yes. She ends up choosing the wrong one is what the argument says. So we'll kind of keep an eye out for that when we get there. So,
yes. Well, and she also said that Galad always goes after what Gawain wants.
Yes. Which is, if anybody out there has older siblings that tends to be that are close in age.
Yeah.
You probably understand how that works. So.
Yeah.
And that Galad actually saved Gawain's life when they were young. And because of that, Gawain will take a step back if Galad wants something. So basically Galad's in control. So Elaine asked him what Swan told him. And Egwene didn't want to say anything. Because Egwene's like, hey, Swan told us not to talk about it. So maybe we shouldn't talk about it. Nynaeve, however, is in some ways smarter than Egwene and realizes that Swan actually wanted them to tell Elaine, more or less. If you remember back at the end of the last week's reading, Swan basically said, I can't tell Elaine because if I get involved in any of that, her mom's already pissed at me and screwing things up. So basically what she was saying is, you can tell Elaine.
Oh.
But I cannot.
Exactly. So I can't be involved with this at all.
And I mean, that was probably Nynaeve's goal from the beginning, because remember when they went and found when they had the encounter in the last chapter, it was in Elaine's room. So I think she was probably on her way to tell Elaine then, you know?
Yeah.
So she does. She tells Elaine, adding her to the group that is now hunting the Black Aja. Two becomes three. So... Nynaeve also tells her that she thinks Swan may let Matt die, and that she is determined to go try to heal him herself, which if you remember last week, she did try to heal him and she failed miserably. So
I love how she thinks that she's going to heal.
That's Nynaeve. There's nothing Nynaeve can't do. Just ask her. You know, I mean, exactly. So We end this chapter with an Aes Sedai entering their room. So thoughts on this chapter? Not a whole lot to this chapter. So
no, what's going on? Filling in LA, they're gonna do, and like making sure they're all on the same page.
Exactly. Setting up what happened, what has happened in the recent past, and then giving us a little bit of foreshadowing at the end for what's coming in the future. Good times. Not a whole lot of notes on those. As we get farther into this, not a whole lot of notes on the next two chapters, actually the next three. And then we hit chapter 20. So we will move on.
Well, these were kind of short chapters.
Yes, they were, without a whole lot of information, a whole lot of anything important really happening. Character reintroductions, personality, like showing you more personality, like with characters and things like that. Just reintroducing us to the tower, basically. So because we've been away from it. So chapter 17 is titled The Red Sister. And the Aes Sedai that entered her room was Elaida. You remember Elaida from book one?
Yes, she was the she was Elaine's mother's advisor.
Yep. She met Rand and basically tried to convince Morghese to keep Rand locked up, that he is dangerous, and that something
and she wanted to explore Rand a little bit more.
Yes. That he is at the center of it is what she said. So yeah.
And she could tell that he was Tavern.
Yes. So she is of the Red, which makes us automatically distrust her because she's of the Red. So Nynaeve, when Elida enters, Nynaeve's like, all right, well, I got to go study and stuff. And Elida's like, no, I don't think so. You can stay.
Yeah.
It's like,
y'all stay here.
Yeah. You know, you're backed up enough on your study, and then, you know, a little more time isn't really going to hurt you, is it? Mm-hmm. So, Elida brings up the Black Aja, which I find fascinating because supposedly this is a big secret that the Black Aja are out there, but Elida just brings it up to these novices, asks them if they know about it, and Nynaeve admits to it. She says they've been told that the Black Aja is out there. So Elida then seemingly implies that there's a connection between Elaine being carried off by Egwene and Nynaeve and the disappearance of 13 Black Sisters. And basically she like sets Elaine off to the side and makes it all Egwene and Nynaeve's fault, right? Like, Elaine, you shouldn't have gotten involved, but you two got her involved. You two disappeared and dragged her along with it. It's all your fault. So then she tells Elaine that she had nearly broken the bond between Camelin and Tar Valon that's lasted over 1,000 years. Like, she is just a very pleasant woman.
She just really knows how to lay it on.
Yes. Ooh. And I actually, not that we're not talking about the TV show, especially since they canceled it way too early. But I love the actress that played Elida in the TV show. I don't remember her name. If you were to look it up, you would recognize her. She's been in several things. But I really like the actress.
I haven't watched it because I've been reading the book and I didn't want any spoiler alerts.
As you shouldn't watch it. And there's no real spoilers in the, well, I mean, for the TV show, since I'm not even really going to talk about it, but give me one second.
But for the book.
Right. Give me one. I'd want to see what her name is. So give me 1 second and I will tell you. I know, but it's going to bother me until I see it. So I'm almost there. I promise. Come on, IMDb, load up.
While you're looking, do you mind if I go get a drink?
Because
I'm kind of thirsty. I'll be right back.
You get yourself some vodka or something, some wine.
No, I just need some more water.
Water, yes, of course. For that one person listening, it's 11:30 in Wendy's world, so in the morning, so she's probably not going to get alcohol, probably. All right.
Okay, much better. I'm back.
All right, so she was in The Expanse. She was in 24. She was in Kung Fu Panda.
Who's the actress?
Her name is Shorey Agdashalu. Agdashalu?
Who?
She's Iranian. She's a great actress.
Yeah. I love her accent.
Yes. Yes. I love the fact that she doesn't hide her accent when she takes on a role. Like, she incorporates it. So yes,
she was great in The Expanse.
She was great in The Expanse. She was great in 24. Yeah, she is a fantastic actress in my opinion. So, all right. So back to where we were. Welcome back, bud. She hasn't implied that it's all Egwene and Nynaeve's fault. And Egwene starts to come up with an excuse. She says that that Matt was sick and they needed to bring him back so he could be healed. And Nynaeve shuts her up and basically tells Elida that they were not supposed to talk about it. This is something that we were told not to talk about by Swan To which Elida, who's not stupid, says, oh, well, that's odd that Swan would announce it to the whole hall what happened and what your punishment is if you're not supposed to talk about it. So that's kind of weird, you know?
Yeah, but the thing is she, wasn't it though that she asked what they were doing, and because she could sniff out a lie, that's why she came up with the story about Matt?
Exactly. That
yeah, because it's the truth, but it's not the full truth. It's not the truth.
It's very Aes Sedai. It's a very Aes Sedai answer. Seems clean. Why are you chewing on yourself down there if you don't have little critters, huh? All right. So then Elida changes the subject, and she wants to talk about Rand. And she mentions that she's pretty sure he's Tavirin. And Nynaeve mentions that they haven't seen him in a while. And just as Elida's getting ready to press him on Rand, Sharium enters the room. Seems like a lot of Sharium entering at just the right time.
Sharium seems
this
to
week.
Come out right at the perfect timing.
Yes. Do you know what color Sharium is? What her Aja is?
I can't remember. All I remember is that she's the novice's teacher.
Okay. She's blue. The same as that's what Moraine is, and that's what Swan was. So
right.
So Sharium enters, Elida leaves, and Nynaeve brings up the gray man immediately, and mm-hmm. Sharium is pretty happy that Elaine's right there, so obviously they told Elaine about it, even though she said, don't tell anyone. She tells them to follow her because they're going to try to heal Matt, and the way it works in the tower is if you bring somebody to be healed, then you witness the healing yourself. So I do find it interesting, and I guess I should wait till this next chapter 18 to talk about this, but I want to bring it up, that they didn't incorporate the three girls into the healing. Not that they needed to do anything, but they all linked together. And since those three girls are stronger than any of those who are healing, you'd think they would have added their power to the circle.
But they're not.
They're not trained.
Knowledgeable about their power, and they're not trained. So they could end up doing more damage.
Okay,
than not, you know.
They could use them as a vessel, but if they jumped in and tried to do something, it could be catastrophic. So
exactly. Because like what if, you know, Nynaeve, you know, got scared or something like that, and she's not in control of her power, and then overpowers the other.
Right. That makes sense.
It
just seems like a waste of power not to use the three girls, but.
Yeah, but if they don't know what the fuck they're doing, hello.
Well, that hasn't stopped them from telling them to hunt the Black Aja or anything else. So.
Well, they're.
Yeah, I suppose. Any other thoughts on chapter 17?
No, not at this point.
Yeah, it's all set up. Set up, set up, set up.
Set up, set up, set up. But I'm like.
And then boom.
I am very, very interested in. Because I keep forgetting that what's her face is there. It's not Elaine.
Oh, good old what's her face. Elida?
Elida, yeah.
Yeah. Elida's
such a pleasant
person.
Because I'm starting to wonder about Elida.
What about her?
I'm just starting to wonder about her.
That's not a very good answer. What are you wondering?
Whether she's black.
That's what I was asking. Okay. So we have Wendy thinks that Elida might be black. I like it. All right.
Yeah, because the way of how she was like questioning them and stuff like that.
Right.
And then really about Rand and that she brought up about the Black Aja.
It's very Leanne-esque. Or not Leanne, yeah. Leandrin-esque, is it not? Leandrin was also a red, or is a red,
exactly.
If you will.
Exactly.
All right.
Ed Zachary.
So we move on to chapter 18, titled Healing. So Sharium took Egwene, Elaine, and Nynaeve. Just one second. I'm sorry. I lost it. If y'all haven't met my dog here, he can be a handful. He likes to play on the computer when I'm on the computer, so. So does the cat. The cat, by the way, not that this will probably get edited out, but the cat, every afternoon, starting at about 4:30.
Yeah.
wants to get on the computer and I have to fight him to get off the computer because he eats when I get off work, which is about an hour later. So he shows up at about an hour till it's time for me to get off work. And it's like, hey, if I mess with this, will this make you get up and feed me? Hey, what if I do this? It's like, here, let me help.
I think we're going to have a little chat with the cat.
I've tried, and he is chatty, but he likes to argue about it, too.
Maybe we'll have to send him in front of the disciplinary board.
Hey, Spads, are you in here? Let's have a talk. So chapter 18 is titled Healing. So Sheriam took Egwene, Elaine, and Nynaeve into an area of the tower that basically nobody ever goes to, which I see this in the, well, I'm going to use Harry Potter as an example, where he's sneaking around the castle and you go into these areas that are all covered in dust and, you know, all that. That's what I see this as. Like, they go to this area that nobody ever goes to, you know what I mean? So, Egwene, is getting kind of paranoid here. She's thinking about Black Aja and, you know, whether Sheriam might be taking him, like, instead of taking him to the healing, that she's actually going to be taking him, you know, to be captured by the Black Aja, et cetera, et cetera. Wayne just needs to settle herself down a bit.
So, I understand why she's, like, nervous.
Of course. I mean, it's not like she just had a crossbow bolt shot at her head, and when she went to go retrieve it, it was gone. I mean, she had nothing to worry about. Jeez. Doesn't she know she's one of the main characters, so she can't die? She should know this. Storytelling 101.
Oh my God, Andrew.
All right. So they enter a room where several Aes Sedai are, including Swan, and they're all gathered around Matt. And Matt's laying on the table, and
that's
basically
looking very good.
Yeah. And the three girls are basically told, you go stand in the corner and don't bother. Don't distract us. Let us do our thing. So during the healing, Matt just starts yelling in the old tongue. And when the healing is done, the daggers are moved and placed in a, like, I picture this as like a heavy iron box, you know?
Yeah.
And the Aes Sedai event stopped channeling and they're all sweating. And I mean, we're basically shown that this is basically all these Aes Sedai together. It took everything they had to do what they did. You know what I mean? So, Matt, after the healing, Matt still looks sick. And Nynaeve. Oh yeah. Nynaeve. Exactly. Nynaeve wants to know whether he's actually been healed. And Swan tells him that only time would tell if he'd live. Like, they still don't know whether they got all the evil out of him and whether even doing that, whether he could survive. And she doesn't know what the effects of the having the dagger in his possession for so long would be, whether it would do nothing or whether it might do a lot. Like, she has no idea. And one thing I really like about Swan is she actually admits that. She admits she doesn't know. Like, so many of the Aes Sedai are so high and mighty that they would never admit that. But she does. So Elaine asks what Matt said in the old tongue during the healing. And Swan tells him that he was ordering soldiers around and demanding that the Aes Sedai let him go. That he was seemed to be both in the past and in the present at the same time. So... and she actually almost wasn't going to mention the Aes Sedai. She says he was ordering soldiers around, and Nynaeve says, that's not all he said. It's like, he mentioned Aes Sedai. I heard him. She goes, well, yeah, he demanded that we let him go. So, thoughts on the healing?
They were like, they held themselves back
mm-hmm.
from trying to help. They were both really, like, being pulled by the power.
And not only did they hold themselves back, but they... tried to learn from it too. Like, these girls all, that is one thing that seems to separate them from other young folk in the tower, is they seem to want to learn all the time. They want to know how to do everything. That's what makes them the super girls.
That makes them the superstars.
All right. Moving right along to chapter 19. Yeah, Zero doesn't like this chapter. He just got up off the couch and went and laid in the corner. So, Yeah, he's like, I'm not sure. The tidal awakening is too much for me. So, chapter 19, titled Awakening. So Matt wakes up, and he doesn't know where he is. He sees that he's in a very comfortable bed. He's in a nice room, apparently a wealthy room.
Yeah.
He remembers a little bit of what's happened in our story up to this point, but not a lot.
I thought it was strange that he remembered his dream, like from when he was healing with the Trolloc.
Yes. Isn't that strange that he remembered commanding the Heart Guard, which was the elite military forces of Manethrin.
Yeah.
So that appears to be almost like a past life, right?
Yeah, exactly. So, well, they said in the previous chapter that he had the old blood in him.
Well, he does. He's from Manethrin.
And that they were surprised by how much of the old blood he had in him.
And he's spoken the old tongue before, even though he doesn't know what it is.
Right. And I think that's, you know how we said how everybody has some kind of power?
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling his is like a power that we haven't talked about, but it's the old blood, like the pure blood. Like,
can you expand a little more on what you think that is?
Like the direct ties to
Manethrin,
like King, the Manethrin, like the direct, like it hasn't been filtered, like because he's been always there. That it's a very pure old blood, like it hasn't been diluted by intermarriage or anything like that.
So what advantage will that give him then?
And plus, because he's Tavern, I think that's what brings it out.
Okay, I like that. Okay, so, okay. No, I like that. I don't want to say too much because I tend to say too much. So,
and then, and I think that because of that old blood, it's kind of like, almost like past lives, and he has access then to their memories.
I like it. How is that going to help him, though? Like, what is that going to do? How does that become a power?
I think because he can learn from what they did wrong to help them avoid the same mistakes this time around in the fight with the Dark One.
Okay, so you think it can help him as a almost like a military leader, like a military general type thing.
Yeah, like it'll bring up the old, you know, this is how we did it, you know, because they'll need that knowledge to fight the Dark One.
You know what? I think we need to put a pin in that. So we're gonna shove that pin right in.
We get a lot of pins of what I'm talking about, Andy.
We are.
Am I like surprising you with my insights? Is this what it is?
Well, it's one of those things that I don't want to say, well, I think you're right or I think you're wrong, but I feel like we might get more in the future that tells you whether you're right or wrong, or to the degree that you're right or wrong. So it means that I can't just say, okay, no, you're totally misunderstanding that. Or, oh, you nailed that.
Misunderstanding that, I think you'd be, you know.
Right. Oh, I would tell you. If you were completely wrong, I'd be like, yeah, I think you ought to try reading the English version instead of whatever language you chose to read that in. Apparently, you're reading the old tongue version and you don't speak that one so well. But, all right. So Matt struggles to get up and he looks at himself in the mirror and realizes that he's been really sick. I mean, I'm just picturing him looking almost like a skeleton, you know, I mean, just, and he finds a plate on the table with enough food to feed four people. And he's kind of munching on the food while looking out the window. And he realizes he must be in Tar Valon and that he must have been healed. Like, he's kind of putting everything together. So he decides instantly that he needs to leave Tar Valon. Because he's a man and he's smart, so he doesn't want to be where there's a bunch of powerful women.
Yes, exactly.
Who can use the power on him.
Yes.
And he does.
And he thinks he's the only same.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
He thinks that.
Of course. It's Rand.
And Randy. They all want to be ice smart one that he's thinking about all this stuff. Was he slowly eating all the food?
Oh, yeah. Just munching away. Enough food for four people. Yeah, he looked down and he decides he needs to leave Tar Valon, but he doesn't want to go home. And this is one of the first times that we actually see him be like, yeah, it's like, I don't want to go become a farmer. It's like there's more to life than that. So
yeah.
So he, after all of his contemplation, he looks down and he's surprised that the food's gone.
Well, and the other thing that you forgot was like he was like, I wonder if they give me the ruby.
Yeah, he's like, I wonder if I don't need the dagger back, but I wonder that ruby's probably worth enough to buy several farms back home. Yeah. Oh, Matt. Oh.
Make sure that his dice were there because he was going to gamble.
Yeah.
So he could like make money to leave if they don't give him the ruby.
These all play into why he is my favorite character. So.
And just, you know, the whole thing. He's like, yeah, they probably won't give me the ruby. And, you know.
It'd sure be nice if they give it to me, but probably not, I suppose.
So I'll have to gamble my way.
So who doesn't learn from their mistakes? That would be Matt. Yeah, don't touch anything in that city. Okay, I'll just pick up this dagger. Nope, no problem. I wonder if they'd give me part of that dagger. I know they just healed me and everything, but I don't want the whole dagger. I just want the part that's worth something.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, I love Matt. Like I've said, he's my favorite character. So, he thanks back, you know, over while he's eating, munching on his food. He thanks back and he remembers that he blew the horn of Valir. And he starts worrying that the Aes Sedai have plans for him. Basically, he's like, I'm a prisoner here. They're not going to let me leave. And just as he's making his plans to leave the city, and like you said, making sure he has his dice, et cetera, someone knocks on the door, and they enter, and chapter 19 finishes. Any other thoughts on chapter 19?
No, I think we covered it all.
Yeah, that was another one that I don't have a lot of notes on. But starting in chapter 20, I start becoming a little more noteful. Is that
noteful?
A word?
Is that yes. A, I don't know.
That's an Andyism. So it is. I'm going to call up Mr. Webster Merriam, and we're going to have that added to the dictionary. So noteful is full of notes. Or the second definition is being worthy of having notes taken. Noteful. all right, chapter 20, titled Visitations. That's kind of ominous. That's an Andyism. So, beautiful woman dressed in white enters Matt's room. God, yeah. She just won't leave our characters alone, will she? So she is Celine, of course. And Matt recognizes her, but he can't quite remember why or where from. Like, he sees her, but he's like, I know you, but I don't know you, you know?
Right.
So he asks her if she's an Aes Sedai, and she's like, no, I'm not an Aes Sedai. Like, I'm better than Aes Sedai, okay? And then she tells him that he, because of the way they healed him, he can expect to be hungry. She tells him that the Aes Sedai mean to use him, and he shouldn't trust them. So Matt asks her if she's a dark friend, and she appears amused by this. And she tells him that she doesn't follow anyone, that she'll stand beside a single man, but she doesn't follow. So,
well, no, she said she didn't. What was it? I have to find it in here. What was it? Hold on.
It's your brain, not mine. So
it was not that she even would only stand beside one. It's like she didn't. She's not like into Baldamon or all that. There's one that she would stand beside, but like she kind of alluded to it being Rand, but then doesn't want her yet.
Yeah, she doesn't name him, but she more or less says, "Hey, you know, there's one I would stand beside."
Yeah,
but. I wouldn't follow him. I just, you know, the two of us could just rule the universe together.
Yeah, exactly.
So she's not power hungry whatsoever.
No. And it's strange. It's like she's playing her own game.
Oh, absolutely.
Like she wants to be a third power option.
Yes. Like
I'm finally figuring out is that she's like, I'm a third option.
She, out of all of the Forsaken that we've met so far, which we haven't met that many, but of the ones we've met so far, she seems to be the one who's not, she kind of does her own thing.
Exactly.
Right?
She has her own agenda.
Exactly. Well put. So
she has her own agenda. Don't know what it is. Don't trust it. And the one thing is that she is definitely going for all three of the boys.
Yes, she is. She knows that this seems to be where the power is focused. So that's where she wants to be.
Right. And boy, did she hone in on what Matt wanted right away.
Oh, yeah. She's not dumb. She was back in the Age of Legends, she was a research scientist. So she was actually in charge of, she's the one who dug the hole and released the Dark One's essence. She is the problem. She started all the problems back in the Age of Legends. So,
So this makes me wonder, like, she learned from that?
I don't think she learned. I don't think she learns from anything.
But did she learn from it and maybe is like, yeah, I don't like that option. I let it out. Really not for me. I'm not getting the power that I want.
See, this
I'm not getting what I want.
Yeah, that's exactly it. This is just my opinion, but I think she's like, oh, well, you have all this power, and I thought that'd be great, but I'm still following somebody, and I don't want that. I want the power. I don't want to have some power, but have this person who's still above me. Like, I want to be above all.
Yeah, so that's why I think that she's playing her own machinations, and she's against the Dark One, but she plays along with them until she can get what she wants.
Yes, or she is against the Creator, so she's on the Dark One's side, but she is not following the Dark One either. She just falls into that group.
Like the Black Essence.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. I like that. So she tells Matt that that the Tower wants to use him, and that he has to choose between trusting Aes Sedai, who won't even admit that he's part of their plans, or trusting her, who will use him. But at least she'll tell him about it and then offer him, she'll give him glory and power and anything he wants. So this is a common argument among people who want to force you to see it their way, is they only give you two options. Option A, you don't obviously don't want, and option B is my way. And those are the only two ways you can do it. So
exactly. And then Matt just questions too much.
He's full of questions always. So
he's full of questions, and she didn't like that too much.
No, she doesn't like the fact that she can't seem to overpower the minds of the three boys. So
exactly. And she was not really happy. And I liked how she was doing something to him, and he kind of caught it and he's like, wait a second.
Right. Exactly. So she tells Matt that Tamal Thor and Abel Cawthon, which would be Rand's dad and his dad and Matt's dad, that they'd been to Tar Valon looking for their sons, and that the Aes Sedai probably won't tell them about that.
Yeah.
And then she hears something in the hallway and leaves, promising that she'll be back. So
yeah, but that was after she was trying to use the one power.
Yes, and it didn't seem to work very well. So
yeah, and he could realize it. And it's just it seems like she's like the other Aes Sedai. She'll give the truth, but it's not necessarily the truth. But then she also did lie, because she told them that they told Matt's dad that he was dead.
Yeah. Yeah, she's not the most best of people.
Things around and not thinking that Matt would maybe question.
Right.
They wouldn't tell him the full thing.
And I think that's part of, she was trying to put something on him where he would believe that. And as long as they didn't come back, then he would be forever angry at the Aes Sedai for killing his dad. And this would be easier to get him onto her side type thing.
Yeah.
Right. Like, they never explicitly go into that, but I do think that's the way she was trying to go. So that crafty Celine, I tell you. So so Swan and Leanne then enter his room to check on his recovery. Matt's like, yeah, I'm ready to be on my way. And Leanne points out that he can't even hardly stand up. Like, you're wobbling on your feet there, bud. Like, I don't think you are. So Swan tells him that he will need to eat a crap load of food for many days yet. And that Matt says, I'm not even hungry, as his belly roars. And that that he should really be headed out of there, that he needs to get out of their hair, you know, he needs to go. So.
Yeah, he you know, go wants to go home.
Yeah, I just want to go back to my village, my little farm. So Swan tells him that they can't be sure yet whether they've removed all the evil from the dagger, and he needs to stay until they can make sure. They also tell him that his description's been given to the guards and that he's not going to be able to leave Tar Valon, so he can stop thinking about that as well. Like, you're not a prisoner. You're just not allowed to leave.
I did like that.
Yeah. But again, Swan doesn't really beat around the bush. She's like, listen, it's like, you're not really a prisoner, but we can't let you leave. So,
yeah.
Sorry. Tough shit, bud. So, So Matt tells him that his parents are probably think he's dead. And yeah, and Swan says, well, you can write him a letter and I'll make sure they get it. You know, don't worry about it. I'll make sure they get your letter. Matt goes, it wouldn't surprise me if my dad's been up here looking for me. And that's when Swan tells him that he has, that both him and Rand's father have been to.
No, she didn't say that his father was there.
She said that.
No, when she said it at first, she only said that because Matt had said that my dad had, they wouldn't be surprised if his dad. And she said, no, your dad did come. And, you know, I gave him some gold to go back to make his travels easier. But I don't think that she had mentioned that Matt's dad was there, that Rand's dad was there.
Okay, you may be right. I may be putting more into that than was there.
I am so sorry. I don't mean to.
I will let you correct me for now. So, all right. So, because you corrected me, I have to tell you how the story ends. So, this is exactly what happens. All right. Anyway, so enjoy reading the next 11 books, knowing how it ends.
Thing where it made where she said the whole thing. Hold on. I didn't mean to be a know-it-all.
I'm just giving you crap. It's perfectly fine. I went to go open up the PDF version of the book I have. And what actually opened up was the Orchard's statement. So apparently I have that open.
Oh my God.
I do not like their new system at all. At all. All right. Where do I have? There it is. Dragon Reborn. Chapter are we on? 19 or 20?
Yeah.
This is chapter 20. All right. Chapter 20. Should not be that hard for you to find chapter 20.
Well, I know that he said that he was traveling with a friend, you know, when he was like questioning the mother. Rand, do you remember him? Do you know if he's all right? And then I think it was after that she had mentioned about his dad. Oh, because he said, and they didn't mention Rand's dad. Maybe because they didn't think I would care. And maybe because burn me, I don't know. Who can tell with Aes Sedai?
Okay.
And that's where he said I was traveling with a friend. But because he said, I'm half surprised my dad didn't come looking for me. He did come. Leanne spoke to him. Yeah.
Yep. I'm right there. I see it. Cool. I stand a little bit corrected.
I am sorry.
You have nothing to apologize for. That's your job, is to call me out when I'm wrong. So Matt does bring up Rand, and Swan sends Leanne off to get Matt some pie. And
I like how she did tell him. She's like, you'd starve. You can't leave here without us.
Right.
Starve because you need a lot of food.
Like, we basically took your life force away from you, and you need to eat your way back. So,
yeah.
And you're going to need to for a while. So Leanne leaves the room, and Swan gets kind of aggressive with Matt. She says, listen, you know, some topics are way too dangerous to talk about, even in the tower. It's like, Rand, don't bring him up. Okay. He's too dangerous to talk about. The Horn of Valyr, don't bring it up. Like, don't bring this stuff up. Like, think in your brain, this might be important and maybe I shouldn't talk about it. So so she tells him that he's tied to the horn as long as he's alive, and that only he can summon the heroes to fight for him. I think, again, Matt shows that underneath his own personality, he's not dumb. He realizes that what she's saying is they didn't have to heal him. that they healed him, even though he has this connection to the Horn of Valir, and that had they let him die, that connection would be gone.
Yes.
So
he reset.
So, yeah.
She also did mention, though, that because of it, that other people are going to want him.
Yes. And that the dark side's not stupid either. And that they will go be after Matt because of that connection to the Horn, and that they will kill him if they can. So he's not safe. So so Swan tells him that she means to make sure that he's at Tarmon Gaiden to during the last battle to blow the horn for Rand.
Yeah.
So so she basically puts most of her eggs in one basket there. Basically says, hey, you know what? I healed you for a reason, and you're now my tool. Sorry about that.
You're now my tool.
You're mine. Oh, sorry. That sucks for you. So. So she leaves, and Matt starts plotting on how he can get out of the city as fast as possible. So,
but it's funny that both Celine and the Aes Sedai told him that he needs to eat because otherwise his body would starve.
Oh, yeah. That tells you how bad he must look, too, right?
Yeah. Well, also the thing is they said basically it took almost all of his life force. And, like, yes, they fed him enough for four people. However, she was kind of like, you know, with the pie at first, was kind of like, I don't know about the pie, you know, maybe it'll all come up. And then, I thought it was interesting that when the pie did come, he didn't eat it.
But no.
He was contemplating, and he kept contemplating and left the pie to its own devices.
Makes you wonder if he might think something's in the pie or...
No, I didn't get that feeling. I just kind of got the feeling like that he was so preoccupied by what was going on that he just kind of forgot to eat. Like he was so preoccupied with other stuff that he kind of like lost it, like his appetite wasn't.
Speaking of food, I forgot to pull out bacon out of the freezer. I'm going to have to do that after we're done here.
That was kind of foolish on your part.
Yeah, because I'm making bacon cheeseburgers, I've decided. But I forgot to pull out the bacon. I pulled out the hamburger, but not the bacon. I may even make my dog a little cheeseburger, too.
Make him a cheeseburger in paradise?
Yes, I'm going to invite... I totally forgot the dude's name. Who sang that?
Jimmy Buffett.
Thank you. Jimmy Buffett.
You gotta love cheeseburgers in paradise.
I think Jimmy Buffett had his moment. He's funny, but he's not that funny.
I love him, so don't say anything about him.
Okay.
You can't say anything about his brilliance.
So chapter 21, The World of Dreams. So Varen entered the kitchens where Egwene is scrubbing dishes. Egwene's just having a great time. So Varen enters to get her dinner, and she whispers to Egwene that she wants her to meet her in her room. You know, like come to my little area. So after she gets done doing her dishes, Egwene wanders into the brown corridors and eventually finds Varen's room and sees that, I bring up how they describe her room, because I think it's exactly how you would imagine Varen's room would be. It's cluttered with maps and books and instruments of glass and metal and skulls of animals.
Oh, and don't forget the, you know, spider webs. And
Oh, absolutely.
She's not very clean.
And
like, she's more interested in her books.
And a pet owl.
Yeah.
And
the owls eat things.
That is correct. The owl is there to keep the mice out because mice eat paper. So. So Varen, when Egwene enters, Varen's studying what she says is perhaps the only page to have survived the breaking. And she's trying to decipher what Roselle of Essam had meant when she said that it held secrets the world was not yet ready to face. So it called Byazamon the betrayer of hope, but it also mentioned that Ishmael was the betrayer of hope. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I thought you had already said in spoiler alert that
I probably did.
Ishmael.
I don't think I said he was necessarily Ishmael. I just said he was the dark one.
You said he was a Chanel.
I probably did. I'm a terrible person. I apologize. For those of you reading for the first time, I'm sorry I ruined the whole series for you.
Might as well just give up. Stop reading.
Yeah, let's move on to our next series. All right. You have no idea how hard it is on this side because I love this series and I want to talk all about it. And there, I can't talk about a lot of it yet. So
wait until we conclude the full series and then you can just let go and have diarrhea of the mouth and just let us all know what you've been wanting to say the entire time.
I probably will. That sounds like something I would do. So,
And all those little pins that you put into things that I've said, like, I'm sure we're going to be hearing about those.
Well, I mean, yeah, probably. And I don't even actually, when once we talk about those pins, I don't even bring up the pins anymore because I forgot that we pinned them. But I don't have a little cabinet where I keep the pinned papers.
You don't?
So, So Varen gives Egwene a folder of papers with information on the Black Sisters who escaped the tower with Leandrin. And these papers listed details on each woman, descriptions of the women, and the Tarangriel that they took. And they all seem to be connected to the same woman that I can't remember her name. But regardless, Egwene's kind of suspicious at this point of Varen because she seems to be suspicious of everyone. She thinks,
suspicious for two. I mean, come on.
Oh, quit being a pansy, Wendy. Okay. All right. So anyway,
will you fall in a pansy?
That's a fair question. So, she starts thinking, well, what if Varen's black eyes shine? She's just giving me crap. And then she dismissed the thought and then basically told Varen that she trusts her. Aww.
No, that's so nice.
Isn't it? So Varen tells Egwene that she brings up that she might be the first dreamer since Corianna and Nadil 473 years before. I think it's funny that it has to be four. It's not, it was about 500 years ago. It's like, no, it was 473. And 3 months, 4 days, 13 hours, 11 minutes. Anyway, so Varen then draws a map of lines that are representing the worlds that might be. And Egwene kind of recognizes this as the worlds that Rand had talked about, that what do you call those? I can't think of what you call those, the portal worlds or however you want talk about those.
Yeah, it was the portal, the stone world.
Yeah,
the ones
like the portal stone worlds.
Yes, exactly.
And then she explains that these worlds are, and their lives are woven into the pattern of the age, and then those patterns are then woven into the great pattern. So like this is a smaller pattern that's then woven into the greater pattern, and that it's all kind of, it's a wheel, I tell you. So she says there's some in the Age of Legends who believe that there were still more worlds that overlapped all those worlds, and that the Dark One and the Creator actually exist in all worlds simultaneously. So Egwene gets kind of confused here, and she's like, well, but, like, are you saying that there's a Dark One in every world? And she's like, no, that the Dark One is a single entity that exists in all worlds.
Exactly.
So,
and they're all overlapping.
Exactly. So then she pivots to a third constant, and she says that this constant seems to be in all worlds as well, and that this is the world of dreams, which is called, how do you say that? What's the world of dreams? What's the technical name for it?
Sleep.
fine. It's Teleran Riad. I just wanted you to try to say it. So she tells Egwene that true dreamers can enter this world, and she believes that Egwene can probably use this dream world to hunt the Black Aja. That's another way she can kind of go after him. So she gives Egwene a stone ring that doesn't have any edges. It's like one, or it has one edge, but it kind of circles around itself. It's hard to imagine exactly how it works, but it's constructed weird, oddly. From a physical standpoint.
And it's like a stone too.
And it is. It's a stone ring. Absolutely. So, Corianna and Nadil had claim that this ring allowed access to Teleran Riad, but then Varen showed Egwene a scar she had and said, this happened while I was in Teleran Riad. What happens there is real. And if you're there, then, and you die there, you can die in real life. Like, it's, be careful while you're there, basically. It's a dangerous place. And also, don't tell anybody about this ring. It needs to be a secret. So anything else stand out to you in chapter 21?
Well, she gave her the papers.
Yep.
And it really kind of like freaked her out, because what if anyone catches her with the papers while she's walking back to her place now? That kind of was one of the things.
Right.
I just thought that it was, it was just so funny. Like when she leaves that, like Varen just kind of like, she's like, oh, where's that paper again? Like, it's like once she's gone, she's out of Varen's head.
Oh, yeah. She's right. Varen's right back to what she was doing before. Absolutely.
And she just doesn't think that there's like it's like she knows that what she's asking her to do is dangerous, but she just still doesn't really think about how dangerous it is to give her all that paper to be walking around with at night.
Right.
It's like Varen's smart, but sometimes not too smart.
Yes, smart and aloof.
When there's all these black eyes.
Oh yeah, she's Varen. That's the way I like to explain her. She's just Varen. She's special.
Yeah.
In her own way.
Yes. So, but that was the one thing that. Otherwise, I'm good.
I mean, what are the odds that Egwene doesn't get back to her room with the papers immediately? You know. So chapter 22 is titled "The Price of the Ring." So Egwene leaves Varen's room and immediately runs into Sheriam, who kind of looks at the papers in her hand, like what are those? And she's like, "Oh, well, Varen gave them to me, so for studying." Yes. So Egwene kind of beats around the bush, like won't answer the question completely, and Sheriam's like, "Well, that doesn't matter. You need to come with me. You're late. If I hadn't..."
You're late for a very important date.
That's right, Rabbit. So she tells her she needs to hurry, that she's to be tested right now to be raised to the accepted. And she leads Egwene to the Terangreal that's used for the testing. And our good friend Elida's there. Yay! So pleasant. So, yes, and Elida's like, "You're late," like gets all mad that she's late. She's like, "Well, she shouldn't even be allowed to take the testing." And Sheriam's like,
"Exactly.
You wanted to be here, probably because of Elaine, but regardless, you said that you wanted to be here. So shut the hell up.
So sit down and shut up."
Yeah. You almost feel like the blue and the red might not get along so good, right? So...
they're like sisters, you know, they might not get along.
Right. So she explains the rules to Egwene that novices are given 3 chances at taking the test, and they can refuse to take it, as Sheriam refused to take it her first time. But after 3 refusals, they're permanently removed from the tower. So she can refuse twice, but if she refuses a third time, that's all the chances she gets. So,
yeah.
So Elida... this is when Elida says that she shouldn't even be given the chance, and Sheriam tells her to shut the hell up, and we have a cat fight, and no. But anyway, Egwene tells him that she's not going to refuse, and Sheriam tells him that once the process has begun, that the testing must be finished, or she will be put out of the tower. Like, you can't refuse after you start. After you start, you have to finish. So, she tells her that it's dangerous and that some women have never come out of the Terangreal. We were kind of told all this when Nynaeve went through her testing, but she's kind of going through the process there.
Right.
Come in. So Egwene strips down because in this story and many other fantasy stories, the women, of course, to do anything important, they have to strip down.
Yeah.
And then she worries that the Aes Sedai who are there will read the papers, or they're going to find her Terangreal.
Yes, exactly.
So she folds them inside her clothes and she sets the whole bundle aside. And this is when Alana mentions that there's a strange resonance coming from the Terangreal, but it shouldn't be a problem. So they decide to start the ceremony regardless.
Yeah, like if there's a strange resonance, like no sense of foreboding or shadow there, eh?
Well, it's not like Elida's like, "Oh, well, you know, I mean, other people don't seem to see a problem with it. So, but you know, if you think it's a problem, Alana, then, and Alana's like, no, it's probably not. Let's just continue. Like, I feel like Alana might've been like, hey, maybe we shouldn't do this right now. But Elida elided her. Like, sure.
Elida elided her?
Exactly. So the testing begins. She finds herself, or she walks through the arch, and inside the arch, she finds herself back in the Two Rivers, and she's married to Rand and has a baby daughter named Joya, and she's studying to become the new Wisdom. Like, she's studying to eventually replace Nynaeve as right. Wisdom. Right. So basically, this is like her life had she never been to the Tower, right?
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm. And what strikes me is it's so different from Egwene's, because like
from Nynaeve.
Egwene was like Nynaeve was like a life and death fight.
Right.
But, and it was supposed to be, you know, her deepest fear. So was her deep fear marrying Matt and marrying Rand and having babies?
Maybe. The first is for what was. The way back can come but once. So maybe, I don't know. I mean, maybe her fear was becoming irrelevant, you know?
Maybe.
Because that's kind of what she is here, right? I mean, she's just studying to be a little wit, the wisdom of a little podunk Two Rivers town, marrying Rand, you know, I mean, having kids, just being a nobody. So Rand in this vision tells Egwene that peddlers had brought news of war and that everybody's fighting some people called the Shantien, and they seem to use Aes Sedai in battle. And then Rand gets a headache, and that seems to be happening a lot lately.
Right.
And it's getting worse and worse. And, you know, I mean, just she's there to kind of heal him and soothe him. And right as she is like healing Rand, the arch appears. So she leaves Rand and heads for the arch right as Rand's like down on his knees in pain. I mean, it's just a mess. So he starts screaming for Egwene to help him ease the pain. And Egwene walks through the arch because she is such a good person.
Well, it says the way only comes but once.
And she just leaves her husband writhing in pain, the love of her life.
But she knows that it's, you know, it's a test.
She seems like a terrible person to me. I wish she'd just die, you know?
Really?
No, I just wanted to get a reaction out of you. That's all.
You're not very nice, Andrew.
I am not, in fact, very nice. And nor did I ever say I was. So anyway, back in the non-portal world or wherever they went, back in the non-Terangreal world, Sheriam pours a chalice of water over Egwene's head, saying that she's washed clean of what she may have done. She asks Sheriam if what she saw was real, and Sheriam responds that no one knows whether it's real or not, but the danger in there is real. She doesn't know if the situation, if what happens is real, but it is actually dangerous. Egwene then enters the second arch, and this is the arch for what is. So she's inside the arch, and Egwene finds herself in a fine dress, standing in the ruins of the royal palace of Andor. The whole city's in a ruin. There's men running around from patrols of Trollocs. A Murdrel appears, leading Trollocs in the hunt for a man. She enters the palace and she finds Rand pinned beneath a heavy beam. She tells Rand that if she moves the beam, everything will come crashing down on him and kill them both. And Rand tells her that he can move it himself, but he doesn't trust himself. So he says he's holding the madness in. And he's afraid that if he lets it go to move the beam, that the madness will take him over. So basically he's a train wreck. So
he realizes what's going on.
Yeah, and that he's full of the madness, and that he's just a step away from destroying everything, from going all loose there and on everything. So So he tells her that he can help, that she can help him. And what he wants her to do is just, you know, to take that dagger and stab him in the heart and kill him. And that'll solve everything.
Yeah, but then the thing is that's where he was, like, it was the 13. Wasn't that where that came in?
Yes, that Egwene says, well, why? Why would you want me to do that? And Rand tells her that if he's alive when the Murdral find him, that they can turn him to the shadow, that 13 Murdral and 13 Dark Sisters can turn him to the shadow.
Exactly.
And Egwene realizes that...
What?
Egwene realizes that 13 sisters... Leandrin and 12 others had left the tower. So then she starts thinking about that.
Which is strange that she's bringing that in there. It's like her real life is kind of imposing.
Right. But this is the now. This is the second arch. It's the arch for what's happening now. So it does kind of make sense.
Right. In one sense. But usually, like, it's kind of like a fuzzy thing. Like, they're not, like, making a connection with different
right.
stuff. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That's what I was meaning.
So
like, so that she's actually thinking, like, oh, my God, this is what's going on with Rand right now.
Right. And she's been worrying about Rand this whole time anyway. So it does.
Yeah.
You know, it kind of fits into her fears. So she leaves the second vision with Rand screaming for her to help him and kill him. And again, Sheriam and Elaida wash her clean of all of her transgressions. Feels very, very Catholic to me for some reason, but maybe that's because I grew up Catholic.
Maybe. No, but I'm feeling it. I'm feeling it. I'm seeing it.
So when she comes out, she asks Sheriam if Murdral and Dreadlords could really turn a person to the shadow. And Sheriam's kind of like surprised, like, oh my, like, this isn't a conversation we should really be having. But she does tell her that 13 Dreadlords weaving flows through 13 Murdral could turn a channeler to the shadow. And Egwene realizes then that 13 sisters have left the tower. So dun, dun, dun.
Bum, bum, bum.
And then she, in such a pleasant mood, she enters the final arc, and this is the arc for what will be. Yeah. So she's inside the arc, and she finds herself wearing the stole of the Amyrlin seat. So she is Amyrlin. And she has a keeper that appears to have been raised from the green Aja.
Means then that she's green.
That would seem to be what it means. Although the keeper and the Amyrlin don't necessarily have to come from the same Aja, they usually would, because they would have been friendly and trustworthy, like they would trust each other beforehand. So that does make sense.
Exactly.
So her keeper tells her that the hall is waiting and leads her to the hall of the tower. And Elaida, being ever so pleasant, calls for a prisoner to be brought forth, and 12 Aes Sedai and 2 guards drag Rand in. And Elaida states that Rand has proclaimed himself the Dragon Reborn, and that he can channel the power, and he calls upon Egwene as Amyrlin to pronounce the sentence of gentling. Very, very ominous here. Like, it is your job and your responsibility to gentle this man who can, this false dragon, basically.
Right.
So Egwene refuses to gentle Rand, and Elaida calls for her to be taken. So this is like Elaida almost taking over control of the White Tower, right?
Yep.
So she gets knocked unconscious, and she wakes up in a room full of 13 Aes Sedai, and there's 13 Murdral there, and we go back to that second vision of the 13 Aes Sedai and 13 Murdral, and all good things are happening here.
But I think that it's also strange that she's kind of like that telekinetic thing saying the wave will only come once keeps getting cut off.
Right. Right, like
there's like a faulty
like a resonance. So Egwene embraces the source before they can shield her, and she escapes. noting that one of the Black Sisters was one of Elida's closest confidants.
Yeah.
And because of this, she assumes that Elida is Black Aja as well, which you've brought up.
For some reason, Andy, for some reason, you keep coming in and out. It's like something's blocking your speaker.
Oh, I'm sorry. Is that better?
That is much better. Thank you.
Huh. How weird. So she brings up what you brought up earlier, that Elida might be Black Aja. And she escapes and she comes across her keeper who's been stilled. And she tells her that Rand has been taken to the traitor's court. And Egwene seems sure that Elida is the new Amyrlin. And she tells her keeper that she never held the oath rod, which is kind of odd. So basically what that means is she's not held to the same oaths, the three oaths that all Aes Sedai are held to.
Exactly.
And she heads towards the traitor's court. Noticing that Rand is about to be gentled. And just as she's considering what to do, the arch opens. Egwene plans to rescue Rand, but she can't hold out, so she goes through the arch. And she's in such a good mood when she comes out, right? And this is where I leave you. I don't let you read beyond this point.
Yeah.
And this, of course, made you very happy. It's not like you were left on a cliffhanger or anything, so.
No, not at all.
So, I find it interesting. How do you think, not that this matters, but why do you think certain, the sisters who are chosen to be part of this, why do you think they're chosen? There isn't really an answer to it that's in the stories. And I'm just wondering, why do you think that, like, Alana and Elida and Sheryam, like...
I think some of it...
Okay.
I
do you think that anybody who requests could be in on it?
No, not necessarily.
So why these ones, then?
I don't know. I think maybe by... They could request it, but the people who are higher in stature get it.
That's kind of what I was getting at. I think it's because they have won... They're stronger in the power. And two, they are powerful inside their own Ajahs, right?
And they're there to also help as well, you know?
Like, oh, of course.
Because, like, even here, they said that they... Didn't they say that they knew that something was wrong?
One did. I want to say Mirana, but that's not her name. It's Milana? No. Milana?
Yeah.
What's her name? Alana? Alana.
Yeah.
Of the green.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, why did you have to stop it there?
Because I like to torture people. Clearly.
Oh, obviously so.
So at this point, I'd like to bring up to the person who's listening that I actually selected it more based on chapter or page count than I did on what was going on. That's what that's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
I think you're full of caca.
I might be full of caca, but it is odd that it's the same basic amount of pages that we read every week. So, All right. Anything else from this week's reading that really stood out? Where do you think we're headed from here?
Well, I'm wondering if our papers... Ooh, I have an echo now.
Uh-oh.
When I'm speaking? Okay, now it's gone. I'd be interested to see if our papers are going to be there. Like, in all that.
Whether anybody's been rifling through her papers?
Yes.
Or whether the ring is missing or has been moved?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that.
I end up wondering about that.
So, in our next readings, are we going to be sticking with the Tower Girls? Or are we going to head back and see what's going on with Rand or with...
I certainly hope we stick with the Tower Girls long enough for me to figure out what just happened.
Yeah, you would think, but...
I will be happy, Andrew, if this is not the case.
Well, I am not the author of this book, so you can't be mad at me.
Well, yes, I can.
I mean, you can be mad at me. But...
I certainly can, because it's your fault that I'm getting... It's your fault.
To bring out a little Matt-ism in myself, I do have a bet on a college football game that is almost over, and I'm winning. So That makes me happy.
Well, pin a rose on your nose.
I think I'm winning. I haven't looked at it in a little while, but the game is over and I won. So that's good.
Well, yay you.
All right. So next week, we are going to read chapters 23 through chapter 30. So I gave you another 8 chapters to read.
Do I get any hints? It better be good, Andrew.
Has it been good up to this point?
Yes, but I don't want another cliffhanger. My heart can't take it.
It may have to, because now that I know this, I might have to play with the chapters that we read to make sure I leave you cliffhangered on every week.
I can also make your life living hell, too, you know.
That's true. I've decided I'm not going to go to the meeting on Monday.
You funny.
Thanks.
You funny boy.
All right. Well, I will see the mystery person who won't leave us a review, even though I ask him every week to do so. I will hopefully have this up again on Wednesday. And we will see you next weekend. Your reading assignment is chapter 23 to chapter 30. And as we push further into The Dragon Reborn. Where do we leave off the rest of the characters? Do you remember what are Perrin and Moraine and their group and Loyal? What are they doing?
They're tracking Rand.
Okay, cool. I just wanted to make sure we remembered that, because eventually we have to get back to that storyline too. So
yeah, they're tracking Rand right now. Rand, we're thinking, might be going a little bit crazy, but I'm wondering if he's not going crazy. I wonder if it's just like he has, like, I don't know, like maybe some kind of virus.
Okay. You think it might be some kind of sickness. So, all right. How about, so we've been introduced to Perrin's wolf dream, right?
Yes, we have.
How does that, can you compare that to Teleran Riad?
The Wubba?
The world of dreams that we were just introduced here.
That's different. That was like a nice setup.
Right. So what are your thoughts on the comparisons between the two? Or is it too early to really know that yet?
It's too early to know that yet, Andrew.
Okay. Well, you know,
Don't be messing with me.
I'm looking for some speculation out of you.
Speculation. I'll speculate you.
With my, that's my dad's line.
What?
He never answered what it was. He would always just say, with my, and then he'd say, that is correct. So he never really learned what it was he was going to do, but, you know, he would. So,
yeah.
All right. Well, I will see you all next weekend. I have to now respond to my mom's text message that we're not going to be doing dinner over at my house because my house is a mess.
Why is your house a mess?
Because I've just been lazy.
Well,
and because she's allergic.
Like, I find that so hard to believe.
I know, right? It's not that it's a mess. It's just that I have animals that shed all over the place. So I have dog hair and cat hair around. And she's allergic to dogs and cats. And I don't want to listen to her complain about
the vetch. You don't want to listen to
the dog and the cat the whole time she's over here.
Well, be nice to your mother.
I love my mom. It's just that it'd be a better idea to have dinner somewhere else. So,
well, you go do that and you have fun.
Generally, what I do is I convince her, let's just meet at a restaurant and then I pay for the meal. And then I feel like that's better. So
that's nice.
You know, I thought so. So, yeah, I will see you all next weekend. Wendy, I will see you on Tuesday.
If I don't see you first.
That would be kind of creepy if you did. Seeing as you're a couple thousand miles away.
Okay, honey. All right. Well, you have a really good long weekend.
Oh, I will.
Okay.
And football season's getting ready to start, so yay.
I know. And college football season has started, so.
My Jayhawks actually look good. They're 2-0.
That's wonderful news.
They just, so last year they played at Arrowhead Stadium, which is where the Chiefs play. Because they were renovating their stadium. I find it interesting that university spends so much money on athletics, and I feel like maybe that money would be spent better on education, but that's neither here nor there. I do enjoy the athletics, so I'm not complaining. But a buddy of mine actually went to the game this week, and he said that the stadium, it looks like a pro stadium. I mean, it's just huge and fantastic, and it got really loud. And so I thought that that's cool. So hopefully they'll be good.
Well, that'll be good.
Yet I chose not to bet on them. I bet on a different game. So I believe you should never bet on your own teams. So,
okay,
that's just a personal feeling that it's hard to be objective when you have feelings involved in the bet. It's hard to look at the game and go, this is what I think is actually going to happen, because this is what you actually want to happen, and they can kind of smoosh together.
I gotcha.
Or if you are going to bet on your team, you should bet on them to lose so that you either win money because they lost or you're happy because they won.
Huh? Okay.
But all right, enough of Andy's gambling theories.
I'm not a big sports gambler.
I love sports and I love gambling. So, and I'm not good at it, sports gambling. I just like to waste money doing it. I'm like, oh, I got paid. Time to throw my $100 for this pay period into DraftKings, and I'll play around with it until it's zero, and then we'll wait for 2 weeks again.
Oh my God. You're funny.
That's me. So, all right. Well, I will see you next. Well, no, I'll see you Tuesday, but I'll see the person listening next weekend. Remember, random person listening, it's chapter 23 through chapter 30.
Okay.
All right. Bye.